While you are busy enjoying your lunch, while you are busy having some time from 1300 hours, take time and listen to OTR News Bulletin.
On the radio news analysis, we go beyond the headlines. We don't just tell you what's happening. We ask why it's happening, how it affects ordinary Namibians, and what it means for the country's future. We examine the structures behind news, connect policy to people's lived realities, and bring in expert voices to make sense of where Namibia is heading.
You want to get into touch with global governance, global diplomacy, economic relations, trade, statistics, human and infrastructure development, and you want to see how policy planning and policy implementation is connected in Namibia. Make time and listen to OTR from 1300 hours to 1430 with Happy Juju.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tere ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nwe udite opoye ekukulile oshafafa na nongeshefa ili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshuala onongeshefa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nune udo otukwetira o special angeta shake ngeshefa omarudi tayo loka opone ushendife nawa nokumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata fanona monika ko Eagle FM onora esatu imwe bali heali nola natu heali bali no heali ile konderewa nora hetatu natu bali o hetatu watatu omafilane Eagle FM the eye.
Very good afternoon, Namibia, and welcome to On The Read News Analysis right here on your number one talk radio station, that is being Eagle FM. Now, welcome to yet another conversation right here. Today is, of course, the 4th of June, 2026, and as we begin a new week or begin a new month or continue with a new month, still in the few days. Okay. Please excuse me for the hiccup for today. Just quite a few things that has been, unfortunately, been going not so right the way. Nonetheless, now it's begin at the beginning of every month. Attention naturally shifts from reflection to execution. The plans discussed, the budgets approved, the commitments made, and the promises delivered all begin to face their first real test. Now, June is not just another page in the calendar; it is a critical point in the year, but momentum must translate into measurable progress. Now today we examine the signals shaping Namibia's economic and development landscape or developmental landscape as the month begins, from investment activity and infrastructure delivery to industrial growth and employment creation. We ask a simple but important question on where momentum is accelerating and where challenges are demanding greater attention. We also continue monitoring Namibia's evolving role in regional and global markets, green industrialization, energy development, logistics expansion, and economic diversification remain central themes as the country positions itself for long-term competitiveness in a rapidly changing world. The decisions made this month could have implications far beyond June itself. We'll also be tracking down governance in action beyond announcement and policy statements. The focus tends to implementation, to accountability and policy statements. So it tends to measurable outcomes as well. Now, as projects advance and priorities are activated, we will assess where progress is being achieved and where greater coordination may actually be required. And as always, we remain connected to the realities experienced by ordinary Namibians, because economic indicators, investment figures, and national strategies ultimately matter most when they improve lives, strengthen communities, and create tangible opportunities for people on the ground. Over the next minutes, expect informed analysis, or an hour and minutes, meaningful conversation and perspectives that help make sense of the issues that are shaping Namibia's month ahead. Let's pause here for a short commercial break, but we'll be back shortly to dive right into it.
Great news! Imba just got even better. We have added brand new features to make your experience smoother, faster, and more powerful than ever before. Ready to unlock the full potential of Imba? Get all exclusive features for just 36 Namibian dollars a month, or save even more with our special subscription plans. 5% discount for 3 months subscription, 10% discount for 6 months subscription and 25% discount for 12 months subscription. Choose the plan that works best for you and start enjoying everything IMBA has to offer at an unbeatable price. IMBA, where the world congregates. Download it and subscribe today.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
Okay, right into today's discussions. President Netumbo Nandetwa has concluded her follow-up visits to government-supported green schemes that we earlier reported on in the beginning of the week, where she visited Ndonga Linear Green Scheme in the Kavango East region to assist agricultural production, engage with farmers and management. Farm manager Jano Rental informed the president that the scheme is expecting a strong harvest this season, with total maize production projected at approximately 4,754 tons from 557 hectares under cultivation. This represents a significant increase from the previous season and makes Ndonga Linear the largest contributor within the Green Scheme program for the 2025 and 2026 summer cropping season. And they've relatively been doing very well. They were the ones that reported as well about the high expenses in electricity with regards to their Green Scheme. Now, despite the positive outlook, General Rental raised concerns about high transportation costs and the need for more reliable markets for maize produced at the scheme. He further noted that preparations for the winter cropping season are already underway, with 196 hectares of wheat and 22 hectares of oats planted. The winter program is being financed through revenue generated by the farm itself, reflecting improved financial sustainability. President Netumbo Nandetwa commended commended the Green Scheme management and small-scale farmers for their hard work and dedication, expressing satisfaction with the progress achieved. She also welcomed the scheme's contribution to employment creation, which supports hundreds of livelihoods in the Kavango East region through permanent, seasonal, and small-scale farming opportunities. Furthermore, the president urged the Ministry of Agriculture, Fisheries, Water and Land Reform to continue supporting green schemes to ensure they reach their full productive potential. And during the visit to the small-scale farmers' plots, President Bonandinaitor expressed optimism about the upcoming harvest and encouraged farmers to remain committed to food production as a contribution to national food security. And as part of her ongoing commitment to strengthening food security and agricultural productivity, the president has over the past week visited several agricultural projects across the country, including the Etunda Green Scheme in the Omsati region, the Okoka Brown Field Green Scheme in the Ngwena region, the Sikondo Green Scheme in the Kabango West region, and the Uvungu Shati Kongoro and Ndonga Linear schemes in the Kabango East region. Now, in regards to her conclusion, concluding remarks, let's take a listen to that. And she has also noted that she tends to visit the southern green schemes as well, all the green schemes that are located in the southern part of Namibia, and would want them to now be able to go and sort of to grow and be able to stand on their own and not be green schemes anymore, but rather where farmers or small scale farmers go to fully accelerate and be able to produce on their own, without obviously now, support of government, I'm sure, so that the farm itself can be able to generate, its own revenue and be able to function itself and make profit. Sort of like, I think how, the green scheme, which the Ndonga Linear Green Scheme, which Jono Rental is managing, is sort of picking up pace. But let's take a listen to a conclusion, Max.
I was here last year, not only here, but I visited most of the green schemes, both in the north and the south. That was last year. And why I have to come here, you know that under NDP 6, which is developed, informed by the SWAPO election manifesto. They are identified priority developmental areas, and one of them, number one, is agriculture, which is both a priority area as well as an enabler. And when it comes to the government, the green scheme are the center for agricultural production, and also to motivate the population to invest into agriculture. Because if the green schemes are not productive, it will be very difficult for the government to convince citizens also to invest into agriculture for us to ensure food security. And you must also understand why we have to put agriculture as priority number one. It is because it's important for food security. It is also important for job creation. And when you feed your own people, and when you create jobs, people become self-reliant, because if you are working, you can take care of yourself. Now, I have to come back as to supervise and really to say the progress that has been made since my last visit. So that's why it's important, so that I see the progress and so encourage those who are involved to know that what they are doing matters to this country, so that they can do better for the benefit of everybody.
All right. Let's talk a bit about the progress that you have seen so far since your last visit.
Yes. First, I can talk more about Skondo, Wungu Wungu, Shadi Kongoro, and Dongalinene. Why? I have to talk more about this, because these are the green schemes I'm visiting for the third time. In 2024, when I was a vice president, I undertook a visit to the green scheme, particularly those on the northern part of our country. That visit took me to Zambezi, where I visited the Karembeza Rice Project, and then Sikondo, Wungu Wungu, Shadi Kongoro, Dongalinene. I could not go to Etunda that time. I couldn't make it to Etunda. And when I was here for that first visit, there were quite a number of challenges. And we put them down, we discussed them in details. And when I went back to Windhoek, I had to prepare an urgent cabinet submission where I made recommendations of immediate intervention. And those interventions were taken on board. This time, I did not go to Zambezi because I know that UNAM, which has taken the Kalimbeza, being open. I was here last year. That visit took me to Zambezi, where I visited the Kalimbeza. We put them down, we discussed them in details. And when I went back to Windhoek, I had to prepare an urgent cabinet submission where I made recommendations of immediate intervention. And those interventions were taken on board. This time, I did not go to Zambezi because I know that UNAM, which has taken the Kalimbeza, being also assisted They are giving me reports on that. But the green schemes I visited, I had now to come and see. I came there last year and to see what progress has been made. Definitely, they all appreciated. As they were saying, after your visit, we managed to get this and this and this, and now we have improved in our production. Then I said, from now, I must be visiting these green schemes every year. Now, when I came now, I'm even more happy. I can start with Ndongalinene, where we are, and then where I'm concluding. As you have been following me, and you have seen yourself in the fields, they have done 100%. In fact, when I came, I had three questions to the farmers. The first one, I wanted to know what has been their production for their 2025-26 summer crops. The second one, how have they prepared in terms of planting for the winter crop? And then finally, how ready are they in terms of inputs for the summer crop? And I got response. For example, where we are, Ndongalinene and Shadikongoro, where I was this morning, and even Vungu Vungu, you realize that they are all talking about all their center pivots, they are under irrigation, and they were all planted for summer crops. The unfortunate is the weather that created the problems in some of the green scheme, in the sense that because the soils also differ. For example, Shadikongoro, they say if it rains heavily, they cannot plant. So therefore, some of their plantation for the summer was delayed. Instead of planting November, December, they have to do it February, because when you receive the 900 millimeter of rain, there's no way you can work on that. But still they managed to plant all their developed field. So you have also heard it at Vungu Vungu. You also heard it today at Ndongalinene, that they have planted all their development fields. So the cereals they have produced have increased from the last harvest, which is the 2024-2025 winter season, I mean summer season. They have also started with the planting for the winter, which is basically the wheat. But again, there are delays too for them to plant everything.
Hurry to You Saver for mega savings on household items, small electrical appliances, DIY hardware, and motor products. Listen up. Essentials kettle and steam iron, just $149.99 each. Essentials air fryer for quick meals, just $549.99. Bush Baby portable gas stove plate and a 5-piece non-stick cookware set, just $249.99 each. You save for luxury you can afford.
There are delays too for them to plant everything, because when it was raining until May, they could not harvest because the maize is still wet. So again, the rain until the 22nd of May has also caused a delay for the plantation for summer, I mean for winter. So these are always the challenge you find in agriculture. But by and large, I can tell you that I'm satisfied with what they have done. Skondo also is, that one is a mixed farming, as they have a program to make sure that they do not only concentrate on cereals, but they have also the cash crops that are coming in. And I was so happy to see them introducing new crops like the garlic. So it's really, they are making good progress. But still the challenges are there that needs to be addressed so that they continue. For example, here at Ndongalinene, there is a land that's still to be developed. And where they are now planning to go for tree planting, cash crops, as well as vegetables, so that they can do the same as what is happening in Skondo. Skondo is also planning to have a feedlot because of the soil that they are having. So you can see how the green schemes are really improving. The Etunda, as I say, that Etunda, I cannot make a big comparison because 2024, I could not go there. 2025.
Okay, and now let's pause here for a short commercial break, but we'll be back shortly for an interesting conversation, one that was supposed to happen yesterday, but thankfully today is not too late either. So stay tuned for that.
Lipura nengeno wapumbwa Eva Tero ulikoni maondo tuto ingida ashike kapeno nweko dite okoye ekukurile oshafafa na nongeshe faili mehola mo iho etike kovano ile koshiwana onongeshe faa ya pumbwa kukaraya kovano okupitira mo Eagle FM otuna evito danjuka okukwetira oipindi konu konda doi inawa nuneudo otukwetira o special ange tashake ngeshe faa omarudi dayo loka opone ushendi fenawa nukumona oijamo ili nawa ninge fata Fanona, Monica, Co, Eagle FM, Honore Tatime, Bali Heali, Nola Natu, Heali Bali, No Heali, Ileko Berewa, Nora Hetatu Natu, Bali O Hetatu Batatu, Oma Felane, Eagle FM, The Eye.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in Parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura.
Uh-huh.
And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before.
Mm.
It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, The Eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
My friend, why do you seem so worried?
Ace, I'm planning an event for next weekend, and I don't know how to best get people to hear about it.
Saima, don't worry about those small things. Contact Eagle FM today. Eagle FM has a dedicated team that can travel anywhere countrywide to broadcast live at any event, such as a promotion, organizational launch, anniversary, wedding, funeral, political or traditional, and church events.
Welcome back, and now other interesting news. Pepco's new bank and why this matters beyond the 920 million rand investment. Now, the announcement that Pepco will launch its new bank, Plus B, is not simply a retailer entering banking. It represents a broader shift taking place across Southern Africa, where retailers are increasingly becoming financial service providers. Now, Pepco plans to launch the bank in April 2027, subject to final regulatory approvals, with a target of attracting 1.8 million rents primarily banking customers within 5 years. Not rents. Anyway, unlike traditional banks that rely mainly on branches, Pepco already has access to millions of customers through brands such as Pep, which has become a very common household name, Ackermans, Dunnes, and Refinery. The company intends to combine digital banking through mobile platforms, physical banking through thousands of retail locations, existing financial products such as loans, insurance, payments, and cash services. Pepco executives say customers will be able to transact through more than 6,500 stores across South Africa, giving the bank a much larger physical footprint than many traditional banking competitors. Now, one of the most significant aspects of the launch is the promise of zero banking fees. This is aimed at lower income households, consumers who feel traditional banking costs are just way too expensive with prices coming up to the rooftop. Now, young people entering the banking system and also aimed at informal sector workers who still rely heavily on cash. Now, the strategy follows a trend seen with low-cost and digital banks such as Timee Bank, which have grown rapidly by reducing fees and simplifying access to financial services. Now, what's probably the hidden cost since it's zero banking fees? Now, what makes this move particularly interesting is that Pepco is not starting from zero. The retailer already processes around 22 million cash in and cash out transactions annually, around 4 million bill payments annually. In other words, millions of customers are already using Pepco stores for financial transactions. The bank is effectively formalizing and expanding services that customers are already accustomed to using. Perhaps question could be why investors are paying attention to this. Well, for retailers, banking is attracting because it often produces higher profit margins than retail sales and more frequent customer engagement with additional revenue streams beyond clothing and household goods. And as consumers' spending becomes more pressured, financial services provide retailers with another way to grow earnings. And analysts see Pepco's banking strategy as part of its transition from a pure retailer into a broader financial service ecosystem. Now, before we get into this with an economist, let's just a little bit of short background again.
Most South Africans don't know that the same company selling school uniforms and cheap airtime is set to become its own bank. So Pepco, yeah, the company behind Pep, Ackermans, and OK Furniture, has now received regulatory approval subject to conditions to establish a bank in South Africa. But the interesting part is that this didn't happen overnight. The company has been quietly building a financial services machine underneath its retail empire for years. I mean, its lending business, Capfin, now has 378,000 active loans. Its insurance arm, Abacus, covers more than 1.3 million lives. And PhoneYam, its phone rental product, has exploded to 2.4 million active accounts. So that's what makes this bigger than just another banking launch. I mean, Pepco already has over 6,600 stores, 32 million customers, and millions of people interacting with its financial products every single month. In other words, it already has the customer relationships that most banks spend decades trying to build. And so increasingly, these big retailers are starting to realize something important. If you already control where people shop, borrow, insure themselves, and pay for things, becoming a bank starts looking less like a leap and more like the obvious next step. For more South African news, subscribe. Most South Africans don't know that the same company selling school uniforms and cheap airtime is set to become its own bank. So Pepco, yeah, the company behind...
Right, now let's provide some bit of context around this news. Of course, joining me in studio now, not telephonically this time around, physically, is economist Peter Franz. Franz, thank you so much for making time for us and welcome to On The Radar.
Thank you for having me. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah, sure. Okay. Now, of course, Pepco, quite interesting news because Pep seems to be growing its wings bigger and wider. Not so long ago, they actually took on some more retail shops, Big Daddy being one of them. And now we're talking about Plus B Bank. What do you think about a retail company now going or opening up a bank?
Yeah, I think that's a good initiative. Yeah. First of all, they are taking off the competition,
given the fact that they are just like, they have a background of retail industry and now being merging into a bank. I think when it comes to also the cost and their banking charges, I think they're already winning the competition in the banking industry. However, still, when it comes to legal part, they still have to comply with all the Competition Act, especially if they have to come to Namibia, they will have to comply with all the Namibia Competition Commission Act and also the banking Act from Bonn. Yeah.
Interesting. So it's not a walk in the park as much as they are a South African company and then they sort out all things within South Africa. They still have to come and comply with the Namibia Competition Commission. Because I remember it's the same process that they went through when they wanted to acquire more stores. Why so then? Because every country has its own rules or?
Yes. So they are looking at the domestic industry as well as the domestic players that are involved in the industry. However, now we only know about the Bank Windhoek that is fully owned by Namibians. Of course, most of the banks, there are Namibians that own some shares, but still they are foreign banks.
Yeah.
We also have an example of Trustco, which they wanted to merge into the banking, but unfortunately couldn't meet the requirements that were required by Bonn. So these are the things that we have to consider when they are coming into our country. Yeah. And also, I think maybe they can just, the fact that they also having retail as backed the shop, we already have the shops here. We also have to make sure that competition, it's fair from both hands, not just from the fact that they have a background of retail, that they have access to the industry already. No, they still have to comply with the laws and regulations that are within the nation.
Quite interesting. You spoke about Trustco, and I like that you bring that up. And it seems like it could be perhaps easy to penetrate the market as a bank, and sustaining it is another thing. Why so?
So basically, I don't think it's actually easy to enter the market. There are a lot of barriers, actually, from the commercial banking side. You have to, this amount that you have to submit to Bank of Namibia every day, if I'm not wrong. It should be every day, because it has to measure liquidity for the bank on a daily basis. So if the liquidity doesn't meet the requirements, unfortunately, the bank have to close down because they are very sensitive. You are dealing with people's money. People invest their lives in this bank. So they have to meet the daily requirements. Yeah. So that's why now you find the things of overnight borrowing, a bank borrowing from another bank just to make sure that they actually meet the liquidity requirements.
Let's pause here. We'll be back shortly. We have a scheduled commercial break coming up, but please do stay tuned. We're only getting started with this conversation. Don't go anywhere. Right here on the Reading News Analysis.
Warm up with Red Hot Deals at WB. Get 5 kg Best Choice White or Light Brown Sugar for $92.99. 4 kg Cadilla Mixed Chicken Portions for only $194.99. A 250 gram Nestle Hot Chocolate Pouch for $49.99. And 1 liter Clover Ultra UHT Milk for just $21.99. See more month-end specials at furmanbrock.com.
And we are back. We're speaking about Pepco entering the banking system, and it's a South African based company. Now, Franz, if for instance Namibia, perhaps a retail company in Namibia, do we have retail companies? No. Okay, anyway, let's say Model wants to venture into a bank. How easy will that be? Let's say they meet all the requirements, since they already have a lot of people nationwide or countrywide who are familiar with Model, which was before Pick and Pay, right? How do they leverage on the customers they already have to be able to retain or be able to actually have already people as they are starting up?
Yeah, Model itself, it's owned by I think one of the people with those people in the country. People with I think it's they are into property, they are into
ONL,
they are into tourism and everything. So I think if they want to emerge into the banking industry, it will be very easy for them to penetrate, given the fact that they have already established themselves in various industries.
Right.
We are talking about, like, they are literally everywhere. Like, doesn't matter which industry. So if they can take advantage of it, I think their penetration is going to be very easy. They have a very good team in place. The deals that have been closing, I think it's anyone that look at them will be very impressed. So for me, from my side, I think they have a very good team that is in place. And if they want to merge into a banking industry, it will be very easier for them to penetrate within the industry. Given the fact they're already from Pick and Pay, I think also, is it Heartleaf or... So, yeah, they just have a lot of customers everywhere. So if they can use maybe a model banking system that can be used to pay everywhere, wherever their services are, I think it will be very easy for them.
Yeah. What about zero banking fees? Pepco is starting off with zero banking fees. Now, question that comes to my mind, how do they intend to make profit out of it? Or is it some sort of like a strategy perhaps sometimes that when you're penetrating into a new market, you want to pull the customers and eventually then add some fees? What's your take on that from an economist perspective?
Yeah, it should be a penetrating strategy for them. They are getting people to trust them, but then eventually I think they will have to put some fees there, or maybe there are maybe they're going to make their product expensive. We don't know. Yeah. But then eventually they're going to put some fees because that's where the most of the income is going to come from. Yeah. So with their zero service fees, I think it's actually a good initiative to enter in the industry. Everyone would want to save their money or to get their money at $0.
Yeah.
They don't want extra dollar into water. Yeah.
Speaking about $0 and spending extra cash, traditional banks have become really expensive. Honestly, a lot of people are complaining about banking fees that are just skyrocketing. Now, how do you say perhaps if retail shops such as Pepco now enters into the banking sector and people may decide to say, you know what, I might want to move from all those high expensive or high monthly fees, banking fees, to actually Pepco? How do you think traditional bankers, you know, can retain their customers?
I think it's in human nature where they just tend to focus on a certain bank. Like, it's like brand loyalty. Some of them have brand loyalty. They are very strong. The people that you mostly find moving from banks to banks are the ones with credit issues. Those ones, I will guarantee you, they will want to move. Yeah. But then also, one looking at zero service fees, they would definitely want to have maybe two accounts or three. If they already have two, they would want to a new experience of zero accounts, and maybe they would want also to be their saving bank or whatsoever. Yeah, but then it's something that will move people. People would want to move, of course. If I have to send my e-wallet with FNB for $200 and being charged $10, I would want to send the money with zero cost.
Exactly.
I think it's, a lot of people are going to gamble with it, and we cannot wait for it to reach the Namibian market just to see what will happen.
Indeed. Now, lastly, also, there's a saying, do not despise the days of small beginnings. Back then, Pep. I think a lot of people didn't even want to be associated with PEP.
Yeah.
It's a low quality thing, or I don't know. But now PEP has really made its presence felt. I think the way PEP has been growing, what message does it send to small retailers or perhaps any company out there that is starting off small? What message by the actions itself of Pepco? What message perhaps does it send to business owners out there? They are still relatively small.
Yeah, I think it's the fact that they had their model straight from the beginning.
Yeah,
I think if you look at maybe back in 2000s, people usually considered Pep as just school uniform shop, but now Pep is selling clothes, selling soccer boots, shoes,
household appliances. Household. We have Pep Home.
Yeah. Now Pep Home and everything. So I think it's the model that they have. They didn't give up on their model. They knew what they were doing, and I think that's the most important. But as a business person, you must when you are starting a business, you must always look for new initiatives. You must surround yourself with people that think outside their box, people that would outgrow you and give you motivations and so forth. And also, I think it's just the most important part is the model, the business model. Have it set, follow the model, irregardless of how much money that you have made. Just follow the model, trust your process, and the result will come.
Because we are
about to witness another result.
Exactly. And I'm thinking also perhaps shareholders and those running the company, the decision makers, the executives, are probably very, yes, you say follow the model, but it requires discipline and consistency.
Yes.
I mean, if you have a shareholder, we start off a company now, France, and then I want to pull out and go buy a Range Rover. I think the consistency and the discipline comes also with how a business will grow.
Yeah. Yes, absolutely. So you should surround yourself with people that understand the business. Not that, chief, you made 1 million, let's go buy R7 or whatsoever.
Yeah.
So stick to the model, be disciplined, as you said, and everything will come. Eventually, you will eventually reap what you have sowed. Like, even if it's after years, it will come.
Definitely.
And the breakthrough will come.
Yeah.
Yes.
Cool. Franz, thank you so much for engaging us. It's always a pleasure to engage you and tapping into your wisdom and knowledge.
All right. Thank you. It's always a pleasure to have me around.
Sure. Okay, and then we had it from economist Peter Franz. I think the voice has become very familiar now. We usually engage him on economic-related matters. Nonetheless, let's pause right here. This right here is on the Reader News Analysis. Stay tuned for economic indicators and thereafter news beyond the borders of Namibia. Don't go anywhere.
Eagle FM lets you express your constitutional rights of freedom of expression without fear of favor.
This is actually, to put it mildly, an economic scandal.
Fraud.
Fraud, it's a scandal.
Scandal.
Why do you give a tender to somebody who does not have capacity to build? Why should you do that? You know a person that does not have the capacity to build.
Eagle FM lets you talk.
That's why I'm always telling people in parliament, let me not take up my Katatura manners.
Right.
Because I grew up in Katatura. And I will not hesitate to tell you off if it is needed to do.
Be part of the debate by setting the agenda.
My response in terms of Rwanda at 6% is that we had been there before. We've had 6% growth before. It's not something that Namibia has not achieved in the past, and it's not something that Namibia will not be able to achieve in the future.
Eagle FM, the eye.
Want to know about Namibia's latest business and economic news? Then look no further than the Villager newspaper. The Villager is an e-paper that is published every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday for free, directly to your phone or computer. To become a subscriber, simply send a WhatsApp message with your number and email address to 081-200-4144. Be sure to save the phone number as a contact. The Villager, wherever you are.
And now for some economic indicators, we'll start off with the US dollar. US dollar today is equal to 16 Namibian dollars, 0.26 cents. One Australian dollar is equal to 11 Namibian dollars, 0.62 cents. And one United Arab Emirates dirham is equal to 4 Namibian dollars and 43 cents. One pound sterling is equal to 21 Namibian dollars, 0.88 cents. And one European dollar is equal to 18 Namibian dollars, 0.92 cents. And lastly, but not least, one Botswana pula is equal to 1 Namibian dollar and 21 cents. And with that being said, we now cross over to news beyond the borders of Namibia. Perhaps let's start off in South Africa. So they're still talking about severe weather, but I think we covered that extensively yesterday. Let's talk about the trade between South Africa and Kenya. They say there's a lot of trade between South Africa and Kenya. Let's take a listen.
President Cyril Ramaphosa will welcome President William Ruto for a state visit focused on expanding trade, investment and cooperation between the two countries, widely regarded as economic gateways to southern and East Africa. Men in Kenya are hopeful that the visit will open new opportunities for business and strengthen economic ties.
I think the introduction of AfAfta, which is a free trade in Africa, is the bigger picture that we're looking at. But you have to narrow it down to trade between two countries. So at this point, looking at South Africa versus Kenya, there is a lot of trade happening, unfortunately, in favor of South Africa. I think currently, I was just looking at the March 2026 figures, which is just a few months ago, South Africa is trading around 841 million rands per month, exports to Kenya. And the other way around is only 26. So there's a huge imbalance of trade, looking at almost an imbalance of 30-1. But that's not something to look at in terms of figures, but I think it's more of it's growing very well over the last few years. And I think looking forward, especially some of the migration issues that have been sorted, we should be able to see a lot more trade happening between South Africa and Kenya.
The two countries already enjoy visa-free travel arrangements. The visit also comes at a time when migration remains a sensitive issue across the region.
When you come to this matter, it's a complex matter. And I think Zimbabwe. What should be done is that the African diaspora should not be painted with one brush, because really it's not one. And we need to look at the matter country to country.
Residents in Johannesburg share their views on what they hope the leaders will achieve.
First of all, I think it has been my vision for beside Kenyan, South Africa, as a whole, like the countries that are closer to each other, especially the other countries like Botswana and stuff. But let me talk about Kenya. Kenya brings a lot of impact in South Africa. I think it's a good thing that they meet since the president is coming this side. Get Kenyan president to come and meet the South African president. It's a very good honor, and I hope they're going to gather and do the right thing. I believe in them. There's a huge business thing relating to business. It's a huge opportunity for South African, also for Kenyan.
I think Gift said a lot. It can make a lot of change, a lot, and business opportunities like here at Egoli.
The state visit will also feature a business forum aimed at unlocking new opportunities for trade and investment and expanding cooperation in strategic sectors that can benefit both economies. Kailihle Khumalo, SABC News, Johannesburg.
Kenyan President William Ruto's state visit to South Africa is also focusing on trade and investment.
Well, another major story following today, President Cyril Ramaphosa will today host his Kenyan counterpart, President William Ruto, on a state visit at the Union Buildings in Tshwane. Well, we're going to cross to SABC News reporter Kailihle Khumalo. In fact, also Samkelo Masego standing by to bring us some up to speed there. Good morning, Samkelo. Samkelo, we're obviously looking at the bilateral relations, the talks on that front. But beyond that, there are also quite a few key African issues on the continent that
care
needs to be
that builds with you. That's the rollover benefit from NHB. When you claim less than a defined amount of your day-to-day benefits in a year, the unused amount is carried over for the next year, like a savings account for your health. You can use your rollover benefit in many ways, from co-payments to medical costs usually not covered, even contribution holidays. Learn more at nhb.com.na. T's and C's apply. NHB, rooted in care for you.
Your health, your life, your peace of mind. NHP, we're about you.
Talk to us about what we can expect between the two largest economies, or two of the largest economies in Africa this morning. It's over to you.
While diesel, the trade value of South Africa's trade with Kenya stands at 10.5 billion rands. That is the trade value between South Africa and the Republic of Kenya, which spans particularly in the telecommunications, the banking and the retail space, with the South African companies, about 60 of them operating. In fact, it is 60 companies in South Africa that are operating within Kenya at this point in time. This state visit of President William Ruto to South Africa will mainly centralize around the banking sector, telecommunications, and the issues pertaining to retail and also manufacturing, as there are a number of South African companies, particularly using the chemical space in order to trade with Kenya. And those are the issues that are going to be ventilated between the two presidents, particularly when you look at the change in the global financial architecture, which is one of the issues that President William Ruto has been central in raising in the Pan-African Parliament when he addressed it here in South Africa a couple of years ago, and particularly with the trade relations that have taken place between the two nations. Recently, we've just had Kenya hosting a number of African countries, but also looking at business people that are working within African trade to come back and trade amongst themselves in order to build those financial muscles for South African and for African companies to build particularly their countries when it comes to infrastructure development. The key in this particular state visit will be the discussions around telecommunications, which will feature prominently the Minister of Telecommunications and Digital Communications within the country, Minister Soli Malatsi and his counterpart. And particularly when you look at the Africa Free Trade Area Agreement, that underpins the trade amongst African countries, that will be largely ventilated by the two presidents, who have been very vociferous in pushing for African countries to trade amongst themselves. As you can see, the trade value between South Africa and Kenya sits at 10.5 billion rands, which is largely skewed to South Africa's favor, with over $660 being skewed in South Africa's favor, as opposed to $60 being skewed in the favor of Kenya, Lisa.
Zimbabwe wins United Nations Security Council seat for 2027 to 2028.
Has been elected to a non-permanent two-year term on the United Nations Security Council, the third time the country will be represented on the body mandated to maintain international peace and security. Zimbabwe will replace Somalia on the council, whose term ends on December 31st, and will join the Democratic Republic of Congo and Liberia on the council as part of the A3 in 2027. Austria, Portugal and Trinidad and Tobago were also elected, while the Philippines and Kazakhstan will go to a runoff for the final and fifth seat after neither received the two-thirds majority to secure the seat. This was the moment the results were announced.
The required two-thirds majority and the largest number of votes. Austria, Portugal, Trinidad and Tobago, and Zimbabwe are elected members of the Security Council for a two-year term beginning on January 1st, 2027. There still remain one seat to be filled from among the African and Asia-Pacific states.
I would want to say this moment has a lot of meaning, first of all to Africa, that Africa stands with one voice. To Zimbabwe is a very humbling experience that we are able to represent our continent in the Security Council. So it's a humbling moment, it's a moment of responsibility. 182 votes, which was the highest today, is a very humbling experience, but at the same time, it tells us that we have a lot of work to do, and work begins. So we believe that working with all 193 members of the United Nations family, we will be able to get, to the best of our ability, the solutions that bedevil this world, from issues of climate change to issues of conflicts, basically advocating for multilateralism and making sure that we all sit at the table and talk about the problems of this world and solve them with diplomacy, not with weapons.
Well, for more on this, we speak to U.S. correspondent Sherwin Bryce Peace, who's been watching the elections play out. Sherwin, this, of course, is a significant moment for Zimbabwe, particularly given that it was voted in by an overwhelming majority. But this is also a council that isn't known to get much done. Talk us through those details.
Yeah, that's a fair comment, Oliver. You and I have had many discussions about how this council, whose mandate is the maintenance of international peace and security, often falls short. But I will say Zimbabwe getting 184 votes out of the 193 member states. Not everybody voted, so it's not absolutely a reflection, but essentially the calculus goes like this. You need two-thirds majority of those present and voting. Zimbabwe got 184 votes, Trinidad and Tobago 181, Portugal 134. A very tight competition between Austria and Germany. Germany falling short with 104 votes, not reaching the two-thirds threshold. Austria goes through with 131. And then Kyrgyzstan and Philippines had to go through three additional rounds of voting for the winner to be determined. And much later, Kyrgyzstan getting 142 to the Philippines' receding number of votes. And they will now make up the five new non-permanent seats to take up their council membership on the 1st of January 2027. But you're quite right. As much as this is an accolade for Zimbabwe, if you think about where Zimbabwe has come from the last two decades, right? The farm invasions in 2000, the imposition of sanctions from the United States, the EU in the main, those sanctions, of course, being lifted in the last 2 years. So a major turnaround in terms of who it will be sharing that seat, you know, that council with. The United States will be there, EU countries will be there, France, the United Kingdom and others. And so very much a sea change in terms of how Zimbabwe is again being welcomed by the international community. I also asked Professor Murirwa about, you know, specific issues as it pertains to the conflict in the Middle East right now that you and I have talked a lot about, and also the big intractable conflict that has developed over the last few years in Sudan. This was that exchange. Watch. Position on that, and what sort of experience would you bring in terms of that?
We always talk about diplomacy. Diplomacy is the solution to our problems. No weapon can solve anything. Weapons cause death. Diplomacy causes peace.
The situation in Sudan, of course, just to take it back to the African continent, this has been a complex issue, even for the AU, for IGAD, the UN, to resolve. How do you see this playing out in the months ahead?
We are always saying there is nothing that beats sitting together in the multilateral environment and talking about the problems that bedevil us and be able to solve them. In actual fact, when you look at the UN Charter and when you look at Zimbabwe's constitution itself, it talks about respect of international law, peaceful coexistence of nations, as well as when there's a dispute that has happened, always sit down and solve them through diplomacy.
And Oliver, when that idealism crashes into reality, I'll be here to tell you all about it.
Yeah. Well, let's talk a little bit about something else parenthetical to this matter, and that is new tariffs being faced by South Africa. When I recently spoke to Trade Minister Parks Tau on this matter, he raised this as an ongoing contention and an ongoing point of negotiation between South Africa and the U.S. Now, the United States Trade Representative proposed new tariffs for 60 economies, which includes South Africa. And this is related to what they describe as a failure to do enough on forced labor. Talk us through the details of that.
So we knew this was coming after the Supreme Court struck down the reciprocal tariff regime that was first imposed by the United States. The first time we talked about it was on the 2nd of April last year. And of course, it was only implemented in August that year, and then it went through various court processes, and then finally got struck down by the U.S. Supreme Court in March. And so that was already choreographed in terms of the Section 301 investigation that was launched by the U.S. Trade Representative, Section 301 of the U.S. Trade Act of 1974. And essentially, I just want to read you what it allows. It allows the U.S. Trade Representative the authority, Oliver, to investigate foreign trade practices that are deemed unfair, discriminatory, or in violation of international trade agreements, and to retaliate often by imposing tariffs to protect U.S. commerce. So essentially what they're saying is, if a country is importing goods from another country where forced labor is the practice in creating those goods, then you are now going to be liable for this 10% or a 12.5% tariff, depending on which category you fall in. South Africa is among a group of countries, about 45 countries, where that will receive a 12.5% additional tariff that is likely to be implemented sometime in July after some public process is held, some public hearings on these tariffs are imposed. And essentially, the report from the trade, the trade representative's office alleges, Oliver, that South Africa failed to impose and effectively enforce a forced labor import prohibition, calling it unreasonable and that it burdens and restricts U.S. commerce. Now, I will say this, South Africa is not alone in this instance. The markets were not very happy about this announcement today, closing in the red. And I think what you are going to see is something similar to what we saw with the reciprocal tariffs. This will be challenged in the courts. It will go through the process and we might get a decision a year from today. We have had some reaction already from various economies that are mentioned, including the EU. The EU says the U.S. investigation effectively is baseless and argued that Washington was using legal justifications to support tariffs it had already decided to impose. Countries like the UK, Canada, Japan, Australia, and Mexico have questioned why they were included despite already having laws or agreements aimed at preventing imports linked to forced labor. Brazil's president spoke a short time ago, President Luiz Inácio Lula da Silva. He says, we cannot accept the treatment of the U.S. That the U.S. has given to Brazil this week. It's unacceptable. We are surprised at the decision to issue another tax regarding Brazil. China, a foreign ministry spokesperson says there is no so-called forced labor in China, and we oppose using this as an excuse for political manipulation. So you're getting this sort of negative reaction from around the world, and one imagines that this is going to continue in addition to some court processes I imagine will ensue.
Yeah. Well, Sherwin Price, peace. We're going to have Sylvia there. Thank you so much for your time. Really do appreciate it.
Well, in other news, Zanzibar deploys AI drones in malaria elimination push. And this quite brings to my mind, a lot of people are very ignorant. And, you know, lack of knowledge causes many people to perish. and that perish can mean so many, can refer to so many things. Lack of understanding, if you are not quite up to date with what technology can do, you criticize even that which other people speak about. You know, I often see a lot of criticism directed towards the Minister of Health and Social Services when she talks about AI, augmented AI treatments and all that. People always find it ridiculous. How exactly will AI treat? Now let's take a listen to Zanzibar deploys AI drones in malaria elimination push. Okay, Zanzibar has launched AI-powered drones to fight malaria. The project aims to help eliminate the disease by 2029. The drones carry larvicide to mosquito breeding sites, which is a chemical. Officials say the technology supports existing control measures.
We are doing the indoor residue spray for the entire Zanzibar. I mean, for the entire country. We continued like that from 2006 up to 2010, where the prevalence now came to be less than 1%.
Evidence is showing that the mosquitoes, which used to be predominantly feeding inside the house and late at the night, they are evolving now, starting to bite outside and every part of the night.
Drones will be taking pictures of breeding sites or areas where there's collection of water, where mosquitoes are able to breed. But then at this era, the drones are also powered with an AI tool, which is able to characterize or identify the risk of those breeding sites having stages of mosquitoes in them.
Meanwhile, Uganda holds public events in an effort to contain the spread of Ebola virus.
The first casualty came in basketball. Uganda was due to host the FIBA Africa Under-18 Zone 5 qualifiers in the western city of Hoima later this month, but concerns over the Ebola outbreak prompted organizers to move the tournament to Egypt. The decision means Uganda misses an opportunity to showcase itself as a host of international sport, while hotels, transport, and other local businesses lose out on the economic benefits that often come with such events.
Safety should always come first. Even if we feel gutted and disappointed and disrupted and anything, let's keep our players, our fans, our team coaches, our guests who are coming safe first. If we must push the tournament can always be pushed. Like now, if we decide to push our local league, we shall push it. Why? Because safety should always come first. And this is one thing we learned from COVID.
The relocation comes as Uganda steps up efforts to contain the outbreak. Authorities have suspended all public events considered high risk for disease transmission. Health officials insist the restrictions are temporary but necessary.
Concerts, promotional activities, or any other function that brings so many people that are not structured, they are coming from all over the place and they are moving and they are in this mode like what you saw recently. Those ones we are not going to allow.
The measures stop short of a complete ban on gatherings, with essential and organized activities still permitted under strict health guidelines.
Despite this setback, sports officials say Uganda remains determined to position itself as a destination for major international competitions. The focus now shifts to future events and restoring confidence among teams and organizers.
The restrictions extend beyond sport. Uganda's entertainment industry, which relies heavily on concerts and large public gatherings, is also feeling the effects. Event organizers say public health must take priority, but warn that suspension could affect thousands of people who depend on the sector for income, from performers and production crews to vendors and venue operators.
Entertainment industry and events business is going to take a big blow. But at the same time, we are very hopeful. It's not the first time that this is happening. And we have a lot of hope in our government. They've handled these situations before better and managed to contain the Ebola cases. So I don't think it will really escalate.
Uganda managed to contain several Ebola outbreaks in the past, and they are confident about doing so again. Health officials say the latest measures are designed to prevent wider transmission while allowing essential activities to continue safely. For now, however, some of the country's biggest stages and sporting arenas are being forced to fall silent as the fight against Ebola takes priority. Michael Baleke, CGTN, Kampala, Uganda.
Nairobi hosts 2026 Aquatics Championship.
The 2026 Aquatics Long Course Swimming Championships in Nairobi brought together hundreds of swimmers from across East and Southern Africa. Swimmers from Kenya, Uganda, Tanzania, Malawi and Zambia took part in what organizers called the largest national swimming championships ever, staged in Kenya.
We were very happy. For the first time, we've had a very big turnout of athletes. We have almost more than 700 athletes who are taking part in this competition, and with about 3,000 entries. So it has really been a very, very big competition.
The event provided swimmers with a valuable opportunity to test themselves against top regional competition. For some, the meet served as a qualification pathway, with several swimmers already bound for the Commonwealth Games in Glasgow this July.
I feel very nervous, definitely. I'm excited. I'm going to meet a lot of people there. I think it will make me more motivated to carry on swimming.
If I were to qualify for the Commonwealth Games, it would be a great opportunity
I've never gone for a meet of that caliber, so I'll be very excited to represent my country there.
Coaches present at the three-day event say the depth of talent on display reflects the steady growth of swimming across the region.
This region has grown in terms of talent and in terms of numbers. And I think it can only get better. So many coaches are now looking to see. We have the numbers, we have the interest, we have the goodwill, we possibly have support from our government and our federation. So how can we now go a little bit deeper in terms of performance?
The format which is being used, heats and finals, is the same format which is going to be used in international events. So for young athletes, it's very important that they come and experience, because before it was more like heats, straight heats. And it's very, very important the swimmers to know how to pace themselves in heats before they swim the finals. So this is a very good build-up event for international, and it's very good for the young swimmers coming up.
With participation numbers rising and standards improving, organizers and coaches are hopeful that the region can produce more elite swimmers capable of competing on the global stage. Mohammed Abubakar, CGTN.
Internet access and youthful population fuel Tanzania's startup boom.
This is the online learning platform developed by Ekima Edutech, a startup formed last year by merging two education technology companies. Joining forces helped them to avoid going out of business and, crucially, begin making money.
The only purpose of a startup is survival until you are able to prove that your solution fits the problem, or your solution addresses the problem in the ecosystem. And on our end, it involved surviving on grants until we merged with SmartCo, where we are now able to generate revenue and that can sustain our operations.
But not all Tanzanian startups are as fortunate. Many struggle to get the funding they need to grow their businesses and bring new products to the market. The 1,200-member Tanzania Startup Association says so-called regulatory sandboxes are helping startups test and launch new ideas.
A regulator gives this startup 12 months of market entry under supervision, and which can also be renewed. And after those 12 months, they also sit down to evaluate whether the startup have made any progress against the goals that they set together.
According to Startup Blink's 2026 Global Startup Ecosystem Index, Tanzania's startup scene grew almost 18% in the past year, with Dar es Salaam continuing to be a major center for innovation in the East African region. The country has many active startups working in areas like financial technology, farming, transport, and healthcare. Tanzania aims to become a $1 trillion economy by 2050. Officials see startups and the wider private sector as key drivers of that ambition. But unlocking more investment for entrepreneurs remains critical if many of these ideas are to grow into successful businesses. To help solve funding challenges, the Tanzania Startup Association and the Ministry of Finance are working together to set up the Tanzania Venture Capital Fund.
Our $50 million fund is going to produce up to 5 and 6 more times, to mobilize 5 to 6 more times investment that will go into startups. So you're talking about $300 million that will go into startups through this collaboration of the fund of fund that's anchored or supported by government at 20% and private sector and DFIs and the local fund managers who are already operating in the ecosystem.
The association says it is also working with the government to finalize a startup policy that might become a startup act in the future. It believes this will help make the innovation environment more competitive, allowing Tanzanian startups to create products and services that can compete in regional and international markets. Isaac Lukando, CGTN, Dar es Salaam.
Meanwhile, Israel and Lebanon have agreed to implement a ceasefire if Hezbollah stops attacks.
Israel and Lebanon have agreed to renew their fragile ceasefire and create a number of pilot security zones. where the Lebanese army would take control. A joint statement was released after talks in Washington brokered by the US. While Israel has advanced into southern Lebanon in recent weeks, it says to target the threat of militant group Hezbollah. Well, the agreement requires Hezbollah to stop all firing and to withdraw from southern Lebanon. The Iranian-backed group has strongly opposed the negotiations between the Lebanese and Israeli diplomats, and hard-right Israeli parties are also opposed to the truce. But Israel's ambassador to the US said that he was confident that the agreement would hold.
Well, Hezbollah is going to understand that there is now an agreement between Israel and Lebanon, backed by the United States. The pilot zone project will be guided by the United States. Special units in the Lebanese army will take control of various areas and gradually spread out throughout the south, so we don't go into another pattern where Israel leaves, Hezbollah comes back, and we go through the same thing for the past 40 years. We're no longer going into a pattern of negotiating ceasefires where Israel leaves, Hezbollah comes back, and we go back to the same nonsense.
Well, our correspondent Lina Sinjab is in the Lebanese capital, Beirut. She's been outlining what's known about this potential agreement at this stage.
Well, it's all what is being said, and, you know, here in Lebanon, it's still the early hours of the morning to react to it. But there is something similar to what has been prepared for a long time ago, where, you know, Hezbollah is disarmed, it's not present in the south. The Lebanese army will take control and be present in the south to make sure, though, there is no armed presence in the south. I mean, I think the new line here is these pilot zones that, you know, the Israeli ambassador was talking about. And this is where the Lebanese official army will take control and make sure that there is no presence of Hezbollah. But also it's interesting that he'd mentioned that about Israel leaves, Hezbollah comes back, because the agreement itself doesn't mention anything about the Israelis leaving south of Lebanon. And we know de facto situation now, they have boots on the ground. They are de facto occupying big swathes of the south. Possibly this is part of the, you know, coming discussions, because this is also a gradual implementation agreement, although it is like a comprehensive ceasefire where Hezbollah commits to halting any hostilities against Israel.
Lina Sinjab in Beirut.
Meanwhile, the U.S. and Iran have launched new strikes as Kuwaiti sees airport is hit by Iranian drones.
The United States and Iran have exchanged fire as hopes for a ceasefire are strained further. In the past few minutes, Iran's foreign ministry has condemned U.S. attacks on Iranian tanker and Keshem Island. The U.S. military described them as self-defense strikes, shooting down ballistic missiles and drones fired at ships and Gulf countries. U.S. Central Command said the strikes on Keshem Island in the Strait of Hormuz were in response to attempted attacks by Iran across the Middle East. Earlier, the U.S. fired a missile at a ship it says was violating an American blockade on the Strait of Hormuz, disabling the boat. The Iranian Revolutionary Guard said it had targeted U.S. bases in the region in retaliation, including Fifth Fleet headquarters in Bahrain.
Okay. And that now brings us to the conclusion after this episode of On the Reader News Analysis. Please do stay tuned for the Ankona Nadingi program brought to you by Penambeko. Join us from Indafa Happy Juju. Just goodbye.